It's showtime, folks. Welcome in, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game on this Wednesday. Hope you're having a wonderful start to your day. He's Big Joe. I'm Chase McCabe, Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier on the ones and twos. Ready to rock and roll today. What's up, JoJo?
What's going on? Shout out last night. You and I went to the Vanderbilt-Auburn game at Memorial Gym. I guess it was sold out. What a great atmosphere. It was just, it's what Memorial Gym
the magic
used to
is
be.
Back.
Back in the day. And I know Vanderbilt lost last night, but I'm telling you, man, it was packed. It was fun. And just the excitement was, it was loud last night. Thoughts and prayers to those who sit around me up in the second level because I can't sit still.
Yeah.
So I move around constantly, like in my seat, in my chair. But what a great time. It was fun, man. It made me feel good about, like, you know what, there's still something left in our city that's special, and last night was fun.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And even though, you know, look, Auburn's good. Auburn's really good. And Vanderbilt, I think, is obviously much improved than they were the last few years. And, in fact, what was interesting is I heard Tim Thompson on with DVD yesterday, their color analyst. He's done that for a long time, and he pretty much said that it's the most talented Vanderbilt team they've had in the last 5 years. They just – you know, Mark Byington was able to turn this around in a matter of months, getting some of these talented players in. And so hopefully they can continue to build upon that. But Auburn's really, really good. And like you said, Memorial magic is back. I heard a few people say it's good to have that back. You know, they had wins this year against Tennessee and Kentucky at Memorial Gym. So it definitely was a lot of fun, even though Vanderbilt came up short.
All right, so we were in the upper deck. Were you like me? Did you pay attention to Bruce Pearl when he kept crossing the point you can't cross to go?
I thought
there?
He was going to go to center court at one point.
I was hoping he'd go sit on the Vanderbilt bench. It was just, I was watching all that. You know, the configuration is so great at Memorial Gym. I think it's one of the top places in the country to watch college basketball. But he not at one point he crossed the line. Finally, he crossed the line, and Byington pointed at the line.
Yeah.
And then I could have sworn Bruce waved at him.
He probably did.
Just waved at him.
Well, what's funny is Willie was there too, and I was joking with him of, I guess after, I mean, he's been at Auburn for like 11 seasons now, I think. He was at Tennessee for six?
From 06 to 11, so
five or six. So, I mean, he's been in the SEC for the better part of 15 years now.
Yeah.
The refs just ignore him. The refs are – they're just like, when he gets animated. Hey, and, right? You know, I was kind of laughing because he had a little bit of a limp. And I'm like, it's all those years of stomping his foot, you know, where he had that foot stomp that he does.
I'll tell you one thing that really bugged me last night. And, look, I love basketball. Like, the basketball, right? It's just fun to watch. But last night, Vanderbilt had, I think it was three possessions where they jacked up a three-pointer, and there was nobody within the three-point, in the paint, in the three-point land, not just in the paint and the basket, to rebound. I'm like, is that what we do now? Is this what college basketball is? You just jack up threes?
Yeah, I mean, it's all perimeter game now.
Auburn was pounding the ball inside.
And yeah, because they had the bigs to do it.
And they had great success.
That was the big difference that really – you could really see it is Vanderbilt's just small. They just – they don't have a lot of big guys. And that's where the matchup was really tough for them. You know, they had guys that weren't in the game that usually would be in the game for their shooting, but they – you know, they were trying the matchups because Auburn's just so big, you know. So that was the – you know, something that Mark Byington is going to have to work on. But overall, you know, I mean, you got to feel better about the program, certainly, than you have the last few years. So.
Yeah. It was just – and also, I had no idea that many Auburn people cared about basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was
there's a big fan base here.
With Auburn people last night. Packed. But they
with
win
their
the
War
game.
Eagle chants and all these things.
And after a free throw, AU, right?
Yeah.
That was AU. Wild. That was fun. Anyway, it was a good time last night. And so it was fun to see that magic, although they didn't win, it was still back. And they'll all be back in town here, I guess, in a month for the tournament.
Yeah, well, what's and here's the other thing, too, and I even heard Jared mention this yesterday on his show, but, like, college basketball, especially SEC college basketball, is fun. Right now, I mean, the SEC is so good. Kentucky beat Tennessee in Knoxville last night, or at Rupp last night. They had beaten them earlier this year in Knoxville. So, you know, Kentucky's hanging around. I mean, the SEC has an opportunity to potentially get 13 teams into the tournament, and I really think they can. But Florida's really good. On Saturday, Auburn plays Alabama, I believe, number one versus number two.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, so, yeah. Like, when – and I know Auburn and Alabama have been good the last few years, but, like, you know, the basketball version of the Iron Bowl has, you know, like, nobody cared. And now I think they do.
That's a big deal. Where is that game? Tuscaloosa?
That game
– I think it is. I'm not really sure.
Is in – just a moment. Is in Tuscaloosa?
Alabama. Yeah. So the good, it's fun. But again, tournament comes here in a month. That's always fun. And then it's weird this year because it's the 1-4 teams get a 2-day bye.
Yeah.
And then they'll play to Friday. And then the 5-8 get a 1-day bye.
Yep.
And then 9-16 play on Wednesday. So, I mean,
Wednesday, it used to be Wednesday night. That was it. But now you get.
That's going to be a lot of fun.
You get full days. So, we'll be broadcasting in the downtown area. Yep.
Down in the.
Yes, we will.
Somewhere down there.
So, stay tuned for that. That'd be fun.
All right. Now, so you got to explain Daytona to me. All right. Because.
It's a city in Florida.
Right.
There's a beach.
Is there a race? Friday, the truck race?
Yes.
All right, and then what's Saturday?
There is basically starting tonight. Okay. There is something every day until Sunday.
Okay.
Qualify. All right, now let me pull the schedule up, make sure I got this right. So practice and qualifying. In fact, where's the remote?
Uh-oh, it's going on right now.
There's the first practice, I think, is going on right now. So they'll practice, they'll qualify today. Tomorrow is what they call the duels, which are these qualifying races. Daytona is the only track they do this at, you know, well, outside of some of the special races, they'll do heat races. But so you qualify and then you run the duels, and outside of the front row, the duels kind of determine where you start in the Daytona 500. And there are cars that are what they're called open cars, which means they don't have a charter, so they have to qualify for the race. And there's 40 spots, and I think, 47, 48 cars are trying to get into this thing. And so you can race your way in with the duels. Elio Castroneves, who's the IndyCar champ, you know, IndyCar Hall of Famer, is attempting his first Daytona 500, and he's going to get in no matter what because they've added this rule called like a promoter's provisional, basically since he's a big name, that even if he doesn't qualify based on one of those two things, they'll add him as a 41st car if they need to.
Really?
Yeah, but he doesn't win any money. The team doesn't win any money.
I think you'd just be able to get it on just because you
earned
it.
Hope he gets in. Yeah, I mean, I hope he gets in. So.
Was he the one married to Ashley Judd?
No, that was Dario Franchitti. There you go.
Okay.
Cars are on the track.
Oh, my God, and there's sun shining down there.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yep, so.
Lucky you do all that. Okay, well. Okay.
BK's already smoking. That's good. That's not good at all. Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s team, Junior Motorsports, will attempt to make a cup race for the first time in the number 40.
I think I helped sponsor Keselowski's car.
The Kroger car?
It's Cottonelle.
Oh, Cottonelle, yeah. Yeah, you probably did.
I
stock in that.
I know I've done it, yes. As recently as Sunday.
Yeah.
Sunday.
There you go. So Daytona this weekend, and you can hear everything. We'll have the duels tomorrow night, the truck race Friday, the Xfinity race on Saturday. Those are both on 94.9 The Fan, and then the Daytona 500 will be in its entirety on 93.3 Totally Hits and Sports Talk 830, and then we will have the conclusion on 102.5 The Game after Vandy Baseball.
So okay.
You'll have a couple of options there. But
love it. Which this leads into our question of the day.
Okay.
So, all right, Dr. Crane, I've already told you this earlier, but to our lovely audience out there, our question of the day, what's the fastest you've ever been in a car? Not on a track, but around town.
Like on the street.
I'm just curious, what's the fastest you've ever been in a car? I need to know what kind of car it was and where you were going. So there's three qualifications.
Statute of limitations is up on some of this.
We're not going to. Nobody's listening in Metro or any state agencies. We're all good. So the fastest you've ever been in a car yourself. Chase, you go first.
Okay, so this is a funny story. So I was probably 18. I think it was 18, 19, somewhere in there. And there was a truck race out at the Nashville Super Speedway. It was a Trucks and ARCA series. It was like in August. And I had some friends that had never been to a NASCAR race that had gone to something in Charlotte. And they were like, yeah, I want to go to a race. It'd be fun. And so we got tickets and we went out to this race. Well, they run the ARCA cars first. And after about 20 minutes, I could tell they were bored. And all of a sudden, there were storms in Nashville, but obviously we're out in Gladeville and the sun is shining. They're like, hey, my mom wants us to leave because it's going to storm. And I'm like, not a cloud in the damn sky. Like, we're good.
All right.
And then I kind of figured it out. Like, they just weren't having fun. And they were like, no, do you mind? Can we just go? And I was like, are you at what? And so I was pissed. I was like, I don't want to leave, you know, and all this stuff. So we did, and I got on 840 because nobody was leaving the race. Nobody was on 840. And my first car was a 1997 Cadillac DeVille with a V8 Corvette motor is what it had, a North Star V8 motor. I got it up to like 120 on 840.
Good Lord.
That thing was shaking.
Oh, I'm sure.
I was like, well, I'm not going to get to see a race. I'm going to have one.
Were you worried about cops?
Not when I got to that point. No, and it wasn't long. I was mad, and I was like, I just want to see how fast I can get this thing.
100, good night. All right, Dr. Crane.
Well, I'm the grandpa of the group. I've only gone 80 miles an hour to at a nice fast pace. But
Nani doesn't want you driving fast.
No, I was.
Wait, back up. You've never been past 80 in a car? God bless you. You're like the perfect kid.
Well, listen, my grandparents and my mom and dad really just instilled in me, you know, if you do something wrong, you're going to pay some consequences. So, yeah, especially my grandfather. It just massive. But besides all that, when I went to Italy to visit some family, my cousin Danny, he had like an Alfa Romeo coupe. And he lived in a small little town in Italy. And going through all the mountains and streets and whatnot, he's going like probably 100, 110. I'm like, holy Christmas. This is – I was holding on for dear life. We're swerving left and right. It was crazy. But it was fun.
Well, good. I'm glad you're still
here. Good adrenaline
rush.
That's probably the only time we'll do that.
All right, well, good.
What about you?
I did 111. I used to be a valet parker at Opryland Hotel. I told you I was the worst employee that Opryland Hotel has ever had. And me and a friend of mine, Larry, if you're listening, you know this is true. We took a car called a Sterling. Yep. Never seen it before. We got 111 on Broadway Parkway, and it scared the living daylights out of me. Not 120 would have slayed me. 111, when you come down Broadway Parkway and you see on the left, at the time it was Opryland, not Opry Mills, 111. And I just remember thinking, I couldn't do this for a while. I'm scared to death. I am scared to death to do that. So 111 in a Sterling. And I think it's because I didn't know what a Sterling car was before then. And that's the only time I've ever seen a Sterling. So
I know a Sterling Marlin, two-time Daytona 500.
Heck
champion.
Yeah, yes.
Columbia's own.
That's right. So I'm just curious, in honor of Daytona, what's the fastest you've been around town? Because we've seen some fast speeds every single day, man.
So I saw a list. I'll have to see if I can pull it up in my email, that Tennessee has four natives that have won the Daytona 500. And I was trying to – Sterling, Trevor Bayne, and I'm trying to figure out if they're counting – DW.
Yeah, because he's not from here.
He's from Owensboro, Kentucky, but he's basically lived here, you know, most of his career.
Who were all – that's – Cuckoo didn't win, right?
I don't think so. I don't think he ever won it.
So yeah. It would be – yeah, it would be – it's got to be.
Yeah, I would assume.
Who else would it be in there?
Yeah, I don't know. Casey Atwood never won it.
No.
He never won anything.
So does winning the 500 define your career?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it defines it, but it's I mean, like it's a pretty big deal. Like if you go like Dale Earnhardt Jr., for instance, he's a Hall of Famer not because he won a Cup Series championship, because he didn't, but he won two Daytona 500s. That's a pretty big deal.
So I equate it to winning the Masters in golf.
Yeah.
You can be a great golfer, but if you never won the Masters, you're not in that upper echelon of greatness.
Right.
The same, I think, is for the Daytona 500, because my all-time favorite driver is Derek Cope, and you don't care about Derek Cope.
I do care about Derek Cope, but I was disappointed because Dale Earnhardt was, half a straightaway from winning his first Daytona 500 in 1990 and blew a damn tire.
And then Derek Cope's like, see you later, Dale. It takes it home.
There's a great story about that, too. I'm going to see if I can find the clip with that whole thing with Earnhardt. We're up and running here on a Wednesday, 615-737-1025. That's our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You can weigh in on our question of the day. What's the fastest you've ever driven on the street in a car? We'll do that throughout the show. John McClain at 9:30 here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
And that you have to ask this person that they don't want to answer. Now this person's Dale Earnhardt in front of you.
So he comes into the garage area, and I'm standing there beside the car as he pulls in and takes the window net down. And he leans, looks out, and he said, "Tell Winston I'll talk to him whenever he's ready." He goes ahead, he gets out of the car, and some more media's coming up around him, and we're standing toward the back of the car, and he looks at the media. He says, "You guys go over there on the bench. NASCAR needs to get to the car. You go over there, and I'll talk to you as soon as I'm done with Winston." Then he looks at me, and you know how he can kind of pick at you, and he said, y'all ready to do this?" And I said, "Well, they just went to Victory Lane to talk to Derek." He says, "Derek, heck, I'm the story. Y'all need to be talking to me." And then he gives me that grin from under the mustache. Just like, okay. So far, I'm okay. And then talked to him. Could not have been a better interview, and, blew me away.
That was from the Dale Jr. Download with Dale Earnhardt Jr., Winston Kelly, longtime NASCAR reporter for MRN, talking about 1990. Dale Earnhardt blew a tire, lost the 500 to Derek Cope, and that was his interaction with Winston Kelly after the race. That was a story that I was trying to find.
So. When you speak of Derek Cope, I need you a little more passion in your voice and said, "This guy just got lucky and won." I mean,
did get lucky and won.
That's how you win every race. You get lucky and win.
It's better to be lucky than good.
His first one was 98. Is that right?
Yep.
Because I remember I did a story at NASCAR Cafe when I first started TV, and there were grown men who were crying.
And I will.
And I'm like, I don't understand this. And somebody said, "One day you will." I'm like, yep. And then I did.
I will never. There's. We've talked about this before of like, calls that, you remember, you can recite, the Miracle on Ice or a Super Bowl or whatever. Mike Joy, who will be calling the Daytona 500 for Fox this year, has he's been doing this a long time. He was calling the 98 500, and I will never forget 20 years of trying, 20 years of frustration, Dale Earnhardt will come to the caution flag to win the Daytona 500. Like, that will always live in my head. And then, just a few years later, after Dale had tragically passed away during the 500, they go back to Daytona in 2001, in July 2001, and Alan Beswick had the call of using lessons learned from his father to go from sixth to first. Dale Earnhardt Jr. returns to Daytona to win the Pepsi 400. And those,
there was, if you were able to gamble back in 2001 on that, you would put all your money on Dale Jr.
There was no way he wasn't going to go win that race.
Right?
He was determined. And he's talked, what's funny is he's talked about that race, that car on the Dale Jr. Download, and he goes, "Man, they had that car cheated up so good."
Oh my gosh.
I mean, they all did. They all did that. But our question of the day: what's the fastest that you have driven in honor of Daytona, that you have driven in a car on the street, not on a racetrack or anything? A lot of you have wanted to weigh in. Let's go to Mike on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mike, what's up?
Hey guys, good morning.
Morning.
So, my first car I ever drove was a 98 Honda Accord. Nothing very exciting. But we were on 840 also, and I think every kid at some point thought to themselves, hey, I want to test the limits of what your car might go. And I think I chickened out at like 95. You just pressing the, it was late at night. There was nobody on the road. So it was just like, yeah, why not? So I think 95 is about as crazy as I went. The other dumb thing, though, that I did in that car, which tested the speed limit of the car, was I wanted to see, like, how much I could shoot my car, like, off of, like, a ramp situation, kind of like Dukes of Hazzard or whatever.
That sounds smart.
Joe knows, might know where that is. But there's a little hilly area back there. I thought I got enough speed to kind of take my car up a jump, and I got a slight bit of air, but I landed straight into a ditch.
Who did you call when you did that? You had to call somebody.
Well, yeah, so I called our best friend who had a tow truck business. He's like, oh, yeah, I won't tell your parents, and he immediately called my mom.
By the way, you didn't chicken out either, because chickening out is okay when you're going 100 miles an hour. It's okay to use that word.
Yeah, thankfully, I didn't get seriously hurt with the Dukes of Hazzard thing. But yeah, note to say, you need an up, you know, straight down is not how you do it. Your inch or your ramp's got to have a little incline, not go straight down.
We're glad you're here.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. look, we've all done some dumb stuff.
Oh yes,
in our day, but that's pretty good. Okay, are both these Richards the same?
Yeah, he hung up and thought that we hung up on him.
Oh, okay. Never. All right. Well, here we go. Richard, welcome in.
Yeah, back about 30 years ago, I was a ambulance driver and EMT working out of White House, Tennessee, and we had a kid that had drank a half bottle of Pledge furniture polish.
Mm-hmm.
Which is toxic. You cannot induce vomiting because you don't want to risk them getting it into their lungs. Now, his mama was an RN. His uncle was an x-ray technician and one of our EMTs. And I had my regular EMT with me. Well, they all decided we had to get that kid to the hospital down in Madison just ASAP. So I got on the interstate at White House, and with my CB radio, I'd already contacted all of the truckers up through there, and they gave me a go-ahead and gave me the left lane. When I got up to 104 mile marker, which is where you drop off 65 down going into Millersville,
yeah,
I was pegging the speedometer at 100 miles an hour. That was as fast as it would show. And down there around the curve at the bottom of the hill was a THP friend of mine. And I just went past him, not knowing how fast I was going. We got the kid to the hospital all right. On the return trip, I was talking to that THP officer. He wanted to know what we had, and he was an EMT also. And I told him what we had, kid drinking a half bottle of furniture polish. He said, well, 108, he's only doing 126. When you passed me, couldn't you get any more out of that module? And this was a truck with an ambulance body on it.
Damn. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, Richard, that's great. Thank you for the call.
Hey, you're welcome.
Well, Richard, hold on, did the boy survive?
Oh, yes. No, okay. No trouble with that. Sure. The only thing was, we had to get him to the hospital as quick as we could because you could not risk him vomiting and getting that mess into his lungs.
Well, how do you get it out of his body?
They had to pump his stomach.
All right, well. All right. Well, thank you for the call, Richard. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, we got loaded lines here. A lot of you want to weigh in on this before we get to John McClain. Lance. What's the fastest you've driven?
Well, back when I was in high school back in the 70s, I had a 78 model Z28. Ooh. We was at a high school dance, and me and a couple of my buddies, we had a little six-pack of beer, and we decided we'd get out and see how fast it would go. And this is back in Grayson County, Texas, and we got out there, and we was going about 115 miles an hour and passed this big Mercury Marquis. And when I passed it, it lit up like a half a hill repute. And it was the Grayson County Sheriff.
Oh, no.
And back then, in those days, you know, people didn't wait in the cars. And my friends are sitting there. We got this six-pack of beer and floorboard in the back. And they're all freaking out. Oh, we're going to jail. We're going to jail. And I just told them, shut up. Let me go talk to the man. So I get out of the car and walk to the sheriff. And he meets me halfway. And he puts me in that Marquise. And he says, boy, you know what happened if you hit something? You know how fast you're going? He said, yeah. I said, I was doing about 115. You hit anything, everybody in that car would be dead. And I said, yes, sir, it's kind of stupid. And he gets on his radio and he calls. And I didn't have any kind of problems with the law. And I was playing football and baseball at the high school there. And I worked at night at Safeway grocery store. And I started doing the old poor pitiful me deal and said, man, how much is this going to cost me? And, you know, of course, it's 78, 70, you know. And he goes, it's going to cost you about $100. And I just hung my head and said, good Lord. I said, this is going to take me a month or two to pay off. And he goes, well, boy, let me tell you what I'll do. He says, I'm going to let you go with a warning. He didn't write anything down or nothing. He said, but any of my deputies, or I catch you again, I'm throwing this one and the next one, and you're going to jail. And I said, thank you, sir, and got out of the car and went back. And the other guys just about, they were sweating bullets. And here I come prancing back to the car, and everything's all right.
There you go, buddy.
Oh, that's awesome.
But things were a lot different then, you know.
Oh, yeah.
If the cop caught you up drinking a beer or something like that, they took your beer and sent you home.
Yep.
But, thank God it wasn't these days, or I'd be under the jailhouse.
Yeah, you wouldn't be in it. You'd be under it, that's for sure. Lance, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. All right, a lot of you want to weigh in on this. We're going to get back to this. We've got to get to John McClain, but we will go back to our question of the day. So, you know, you can either hang through John or call back. But John McClain coming up next here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game on this Wednesday. We always enjoy our conversation now with John McClain. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work. John, good morning. How's it going?
Going great, guys. Good morning to you. I'm turning my attention to the combine, which is next in the scouting process. Then as we move up to pro days and private workouts and getting ready for free agency, I think March the 12th. And which is a month away. That's always a frenzy will be for Mike Vrabel, who has, I believe, $112 million in cap space.
Oh, yeah.
Compared to a lot of teams that are over, like New Orleans is $60 million over and has got to do some serious cutting. And there's always so many interesting storylines going on in the NFL.
Well, and I believe the waiver window will start, and the Titans have the first waiver claim. So that could certainly bode well for them if they so choose to use that. What were your thoughts, though, on the Super Bowl? The Eagles just throttling the Chiefs to win their second championship.
I picked the Chiefs 27-24. I thought there was a chance the Eagles could win, but never had any idea that the Eagles would dominate the Chiefs. I watched the Texans lose regular season at Arrowhead by 8, playoffs at Arrowhead by 9, and even though they have a great tandem of defensive ends in Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter, they did not dominate the Chiefs' offensive line like the Eagles did with a 4-man rush, and that's what was the most impressive. And the last time they lost the Super Bowl, they redid their offensive line. The problem they have is their best lineman, Trey Smith, the guard, he's unrestricted. You know, there's a lot of teams will be interested in him. Maybe a team like New England to come in to help Drake May. So they got serious issues, and people were blasting Mahomes for a bad game. I saw in the Super Bowl what I've been seeing, what I saw all season with the Texans. As soon as the ball snapped, offensive linemen getting beaten and a quarterback running for his life and not having a prayer of setting up in the pocket. And That's what we saw here consistently. That's the way it was in that game. I was happy Nick Sirianni got the victory. Kellen Moore got a head coaching job. Although if I was Kellen Moore, I would have stayed another season trying to get a better job, because the Saints, I think, with their personnel system being over the cap and everything, is not a good job. But the Eagles, they got their parade coming. It's going to be exciting. You know, it's not like they've been destitute. When they won in the Super Bowl in 17, it was the first championship they'd had since 1960. So now it's not, even though it doesn't have the same meaning when you wait that long, just like if the Titans win one, it'll be the first ever. Texans win one, it'll be the first ever. And that is always the most special.
I totally agree with that. John, let's talk about Pat Mahomes after the game. A lot of people are like, well, now they got the blueprint on the Chiefs. As long as I can remember, if you've got a devastating pass rush, I don't care if it's Montana, Marino, Elway back there, they're going to get at you. Chiefs will be back, and you just talked about it. They're going to rebuild that offensive line, but as long as they've got Pat Mahomes, they're always going to be in contention.
Absolutely. Him and Andy Reid, two of the dumbest things I've ever heard were that, and now this is the blueprint to beat them. Everybody would like to beat them with a four-man rush and dropping everybody else into coverage, but everybody can't do it. If they could, they would. And they kept Mahomes bottled up, and he was so far behind. All those plays he makes on third and six, third and seven, when he's off schedule, throwing the ball underhanded, behind his back, between his legs, that didn't help. And by the way, I had a friend bet $20,000 on a prop bet for Hopkins a touchdown with 3-1 odds and made $60,000 at the end. I was so happy for him. Of course, I told him bet on the Chiefs, but he still came out ahead. And so I think that I was stunned that the Chiefs' defense didn't play better. But, you know, where was Chris Jones? Where was George Karlaftis? They had been great. And, of course, the Eagles have the best offensive line in the NFL with the best coach in Jeff Stoutland. And so they build from the trenches out. Now, this is a good draft coming up for defensive linemen, but especially on the interior. So maybe, you know, monkey see, monkey do. But there were no revelations. And the other dumbest things I heard is, well, the Chiefs' window is over.
Yeah.
The dynasty's over. That is just preposterous. Joe, for the reasons you said, starting with Mahomes and then, of course, Andy Reid and then Jim Spagnuolo. Now, his defense hadn't been treated like that, but the Eagles were the most talented team in the league. And one thing I know, Chiefs won't be back in a Super Bowl, because over the last 30 years, the only Super Bowl loser to return was the Patriots once. And I think you got to go back to the Bills to see a Super Bowl loser who returned, besides that one year the Patriots did it.
Yeah, and also, you know, I kind of believe this a little bit. It said the Chiefs' biggest problem going forward is going to be the Chargers. And I'm thinking, nah, you know, I could see that. I mean, is that the next threat within the division, John, to the Chiefs and maybe to the AFC?
Well, I think Baltimore, Buffalo are better than the Chargers. I watched the Texans hammer the Chargers in the playoffs. Chargers got a lot of things they have to do in free agency. I would think the Chargers' time would be better 2026. But when you got your quarterback and you got a good coach, that puts you ahead of everybody that doesn't have a quarterback and a good coach. But I don't see. I see Baltimore and Buffalo as being the two teams most likely to compete for the Super Bowl if the Chiefs don't go back, and the odds are totally against them.
We will have more with John McClain coming up next. HoustonTexans.com is where you can find his work here on Chasing Big Joe, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel. 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Continuing our discussion with John McClain. The news came out over Super Bowl weekend, John, that the Jets were going to move on from quarterback Aaron Rodgers. I do believe there's going to be a market for him if he ultimately, you know, wants to continue playing. That's now kind of in his hands. What market do you think there will be, though, for Aaron Rodgers?
I know people have said the Raiders. Well, the Raiders, it would take an experienced head coach like Pete Carroll to deal with his issues of creating controversy. And Diana Rossini of The Athletic reported that the Jets told him if he came back that they didn't want him doing Pat McAfee's show every week because everything he said created controversy. And the next day, everybody's talking about it in the locker room and asking him about it and creating a distraction. And it's all about culture. And I don't know what he said in that situation, but I wouldn't want him going on Pat McAfee every week because I watch him and I know the things that he says. And it also infuriates the local media that he's talking to McAfee for $1 million a year and giving him information he doesn't give the other team. Now, he played better over the second half of the season. It didn't translate to winning, but of course he was coming off of that Achilles injury. And I could not see when people are saying, oh, he should go to Tennessee because he owns a home there. Well, he owns a lot of homes. When you make $50 million a year, you can do that. I think a young coach like Brian Callahan, the last thing he needs to do is get mixed up with a guy like Aaron Rodgers. And no move is made in Las Vegas without Tom Brady. And Brady, you know, he is the antithesis of Rodgers as far as not creating controversy, unless it was something. It was always nothing he said. He was involved in a lot of controversy, of course, with Spygate and Deflategate with Bill Belichick. But I would think if you're looking for him as a bridge quarterback, you better have a strong support system with a head coach that can handle him and be ready for him to go into the darkness, to go on vacation during the mini camp that's required. Those are bad things. And I thought last year he had a trip scheduled to Europe. Well, when you make $50 million a year, can't you change that trip? I believe you can change that trip or go next year or go the week before or after. So I wouldn't want any part of him, but he wouldn't be on the field. He works hard. His teammates like him, but he is just a lightning rod for controversy.
Speaking of Tom Brady, you know, we saw him call the Super Bowl for Fox, and you know, we know there's stuff with him where since he has ownership of the Raiders, he can't go to, you know, certain meetings and all that. Do you think the NFL will eventually basically say, hey, you need to get out of the booth because it's just – it's an unfair advantage? Or do you think they're just going to let this ride because he's Tom Brady?
Well, they can't tell him to get out of the booth. He signed a 10-year contract for $37.5 million a year, and they've already approved it. They shouldn't have approved him as a minority partner for the Raiders. You know, Mark Davis is smart in this regard, relying on Brady. And he managed to pull it off this year. He couldn't go to the meetings, couldn't go to practice. I don't think it showed. I think like his rookie year in the NFL, he'll be a lot better his second year. Fox used him a lot last week. They had him doing all kind of interviews, and then he was involved heavily in the pregame. So they wanted to see if they get their $37.5 million worth. And now if the Raiders get good, that's when people are going to complain. Only media is complaining. But if the Raiders continue to flounder, owners aren't going to give a squat about that. But they got nobody to blame but themselves for letting him join the party.
John, somebody texted me and wanted you to ask, what team under the radar do you look at 2025 could do big things outside the big six or seven that we always talk about? Is there a team in that kind of lower echelon that you like, the things they've done over the last year or two that can make a jump in 2025?
First of all, I look at divisions. And I think Seattle could be one. I think if you look at the divisions, the West – the top teams are going to be the top teams. It's going to be the Chiefs and the Chargers. You look at the NFC East, they've had a new champion 21 years in a row, so that means Washington will beat out Philadelphia in the NFC East. I see some people online, media people and fan sites. I love these fan sites where that's us, and we, so much it sounds like they're speaking French, but there's a lot of them out there. And the Cowboys are saying they're saying for the Cowboys to get to the Super Bowl next year. And I'm like, stop right there. Give me a break. Right. That was just unbelievable. And so in the NFC South, you know, maybe Atlanta with Michael Penix, that division is not great. And the more I think about it, I like what they've done, but they still need to get pass rushers. So I would say, if I had to pick an NFC, I would say the Falcons. And picking an AFC, I'd like to say the Bengals, but that wouldn't be a big surprise because they got so much talent led by Joe Burrow. I also might say Seattle. But in the AFC, I can't think of anybody from the AFC South. Can't think of anybody from the AFC North. So let me go to the East. This time last year, if you guys go back and look, some people were picking experts, Buffalo, not to even make the playoffs.
Right.
They were picking the Jets and the Dolphins to win that division. So I'd love to pick the Patriots, but I can't do it. They just don't have enough talent. So I'm going to pick Miami because if Tua Tagovailoa can ever stay healthy for a full season, and that's a big if because you guys have seen him going back to Alabama when he's hurt every year, Miami still has the firepower to do it.
I love it. John, Eli Manning, not in the Hall of Fame. Next year you got Drew Brees, and you got Roethlisberger, then you got Tom Brady. Do you see him going in after that or in the middle of that? I think a lot of people were kind of – it was 50-50, like, I can't believe he didn't get in. And some like, yeah, he probably didn't deserve it. He'll get in down the road. Your thoughts?
Eli didn't make the first cut in the room. His the debate with Eli – you have a five-minute presentation, then you open it to debate. It was 52 minutes. It was the longest of our meeting. And I think everybody believes at some point Eli Manning will get the Hall of Fame. And, I mean, you know, he won two Super Bowls and played great. Ben Roethlisberger won two, and one of them, he was awful. They were lucky to beat Seattle. I can't remember. I think it was Seattle. And Jim Plunkett won two Super Bowls. And he was MVP, so winning Super Bowls, it takes more than that. And Eli, you know, he's had a 500 record. If he hadn't played his last six seasons, he'd have been a first ballot. But and the fact that he didn't ever have an All-Pro, and people say, well, he played in an era of great quarterbacks. Well, so what? And so I think he'll get in eventually, just not sure when.
Going to be interesting to see for sure. John, always appreciate the chats, and we'll talk next week.
Guys, thank you very much. I love talking to you guys. Can't wait to get in all the Titans first overall pick talk.
Oh, we'll have plenty of that. Don't you worry. See you, John. John McClain joining us here on the show as he does every Wednesday at 9:30. We will get back to our question of the day. A lot of you wanted to call in and weigh in on that. Our question of the day, what's the fastest that you have driven on the street, not a racetrack, in honor of Daytona coming up this weekend? What's the fastest you've ever driven? 615-737-1025. That's our phone and text line. Driven by Wilson County Honda.com. Here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.